Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw, Northwestern Family Medicine Residency Program, Northwestern Medicine, Delner Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Wheat. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you today?
Very, very nice to have you with us here today. Let's start off with something that a lot of people, I'll bet, have taken in this morning, maybe having a cup of coffee or a little cup of tea or something, and putting in some sugar substitute, sweetness substitute. There is some links that have been discussed between sugar substitutes and dementia. Can you talk about that this morning?
Sure. Just recently I've seen a few articles come out about some studies that have been done. And it's been really interesting because it wasn't for everyone. It was actually early. It was for people that were sort of in middle age, like thinking 35 to 60. Huh. And that when those folks are using artificial sweetener, that they're actually showing faster decline than other people who didn't. And so it's just one of those reasons for us to think about what are we using to eat? What are we using to drink? Can we use the things that are the most natural along the way?
Yeah, well, which ones are the most natural now? Because I use artificial sweetener. I use the Splenda. Or is it sucralose? Is that I think that's Splenda.
I would have to look it up. But, you know, the interesting thing about this was it really was it was looking at a lot of them, that many of these artificial sweeteners were causing changes. Hmm. There's like five or six different ones that are listed in the article. And so it makes me think of, are there other ways to add sweetness to your coffee or to your tea? Like, I know I like honey instead of sugar in my tea, but or even choosing things that are maybe more fruit-based than some of these sweeteners.
Like what? What would be a fruit-based sweetener that you might substitute?
So maybe not for coffee per se, but I know that I used to cook with Splenda for my mom a long time ago, but potentially finding alternatives such as using like applesauce or honey or even syrup in there instead could be a good idea.
Yeah, somebody told me that blue agave, which looks like honey in the store, it adds all the sweetness. I mean, it's very much like honey, but does not have the same effect on raising your blood sugar as honey or some or sugars or some of the rest. Are you familiar with that at all?
I have had people also tell me that they've really liked it, that it has added great taste. And I think this is just one of those things that you're probably going to have to try out a few different things to see what you like and make sure that you still enjoy the food that you're eating, but maybe lower our risk. And hopefully we'll find out more information about this soon.
Yeah. Are we better off using, you know, granulated sugar, just using less of it? I mean, some people can't for a variety of reasons, but, you know, if you want to avoid the sugar substitutes because of this possible dementia link, you know, what else can you do?
Yeah, no, I think that that's the right answer. And maybe just having smaller amounts of things. There's also alternatives like coconut sugar and just seeing if any of those alternatives work for you.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember back in the day, saccharin was I think it was the one and only back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then others began to come out. I can't think of the names of some of the others. And there were some studies that came out that linked them, some of the early sweeteners, with a variety of ailments.
Yes.
Some say that if you use artificial sweeteners, that it increases your desire for sweetness in food, that you're better off just kind of weaning yourself off of it. Does any of that ring a bell for you?
Absolutely. And honestly, that's what I tell people also. If you can have something that has just a little bit of sugar and not going overboard, that can be better for you than some of these substitutes. Absolutely. And then sometimes when you do that, you do learn to have the different tastes. and then sometimes you don't need it at all.
Yeah, I know I've decreased my salt intake quite a bit, and I think it's just what you get used to. I don't even notice anymore that I don't really salt my food very much anymore. It's just what you get used to, I think, right?
I think that's absolutely right. And it takes a while. I don't expect people to go from not using anything to using a whole bunch until nothing the next day. So it takes a little bit of time, but absolutely, you can learn to cook a little bit differently or try different things, and you might find that you like it, and then you're healthier for it.
Yeah, let's go to a different aisle in the grocery store where the vitamins are kept. I mean, it's obviously huge money for some companies. How important is it for us to take, say, a multivitamin or vitamin supplements?
That's a great question. And really, it's super individual. But in general, if you can get the vitamins in your food, it is better for you. And so for the average person, a multivitamin isn't actually recommended. And it's really, again, recommended to have a generalized healthy diet where you're eating all of the fruits and vegetables, you're getting your nutrients in that way. You actually absorb it better from food than you do from vitamins anyhow. And if you can do it that way, then like you said, it's a big moneymaker. It's something that you can save and spend more money on the fresh fruits.
Yeah, people just, I see people buying 5, 6, 10 bottles of vitamins, different vitamins and supplements. And I wonder, how good that is. I mean, is it dangerous? Can you over-vitamin yourself?
You actually can. There are some things that if you have too much of, then you can cause problems. For example, many people will take a calcium supplement. And I do recommend that people have calcium, though, again, I recommend it primarily in their diets. And if you have too much, then sometimes people will get kidney stones. And that can be a serious pain and cause trouble. And so that's just one example. And then there's some vitamins, there's some things that if they're too high, then it also can cause problems. It can cause problems with bleeding or interact with medications that you're taking from your doctor. And so it's really important to be open with your doctor about what you're taking and see what interactions might happen with what you have. And then again, just think about your food.
Yeah. What I was going to say, you're talking about getting calcium from your food. Which foods would give you calcium so you can stop taking the pills?
Yeah, the ones that people think of the most are often dairy products. But you might be surprised that sometimes also some of those leafy green vegetables also can help you have calcium as well. And so, again, if you're just having a balanced diet, you're getting more of it than you think you are.
Okay. Let me take a break. We'll get some phone calls and some texts for Dr. Santina Wheat. 312-981-7200.
WGN.
All right, let's see if we can make this the best day of your life. Keeping you nice and healthy, Dr. Santina Wheat from Delner Hospital, Northwestern's Delner Hospital, on the line with us. So I looked up which sweeteners are linked to cognitive decline. They are aspartame, saccharin, acesulfamine K, erythritol, sorbitol, and xylitol. There are quite a few. Some to keep in mind, which leads us to some questions on our text line. Is it stevia or stevia? I'm never sure about that. Is that better than others being plant-based?
I think that's a great question. And I don't know that I haven't seen any data on that one. And so I think that we know that some people have been allergic to it because it is plant-based. But I think that time will tell to see what else we learn about these.
Okay. Someone is also on the text line asking, how is monk fruit? I think that's kind of a natural one also, right?
Yeah. I think that That is one that I have not seen a lot of data on, but I am in general, I think that if you can get it as natural as possible, as not processed as possible, then that would be the way to go.
Someone is asking, is eating a couple of pieces of garlic every day a health benefit? Apparently my grandmother texting in, because she used to eat garlic. If you got sick, garlic. If you scraped yourself, garlic. Garlic was the answer to everything for my grandmother back in the day.
Well, there are some thoughts that garlic can be beneficial to your health. There's some thoughts that it can help lower blood pressure and cholesterol. But really, garlic is good because it has anti-inflammatory properties and it is an antioxidant. So there's something to what your grandmother had to say.
Yeah, and it makes you...
It actually does provide some help.
Makes you smell so good, too, after you've eaten whole cloves of it or had it rubbed on your skin. 224 area code, can the doctor recommend something for diabetics instead of sugar or applesauce or honey that would prevent spiking blood sugar?
Hi, and this is such a good question, and this is where I'm struggling for my patients too. For diabetics, I really recommend that we do our best to try to remove the sugar in general. I also always just say that moderation is okay. And so I never tell my diabetics they're never allowed to use any sugar whatsoever, but really that they should use just small amounts. And so I would stay there. I would start with small amounts and start bringing down the amount that you're having so that you lose a little bit of that sweet taste that you want.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that, I mean, that's a tricky one.
It's so hard.
You know, and probably... if you have diabetes, you should be working with your, is it endocrinologist who would be your diabetes doctor, right?
You know, sometimes when it is fairly well controlled, family doctors just like me and internists, general internists, we take care of it as well. You don't always need a specialist.
Okay.
But we absolutely will work with you. And also dietitians are great to help with that too, because they can look at your overall plan and see where it is that we can make small adjustments to help control everything.
773 area code. How effective are allergy shots?
Oh, this is a great question. So allergy shots can be very effective, and they can be very effective for so many different things, whether they are environmental allergens or whether they are food allergens. The problem, though, is that they really do require a commitment. You do need to have them for a long period of time before we're able to see all of the effects. But for someone who has difficulty with allergies, for somebody that it's impacting their daily life, then it really is something that's worthwhile to consider and to talk to your allergist about.
Yeah, you go in for one of those allergy tests, those scratch tests. Is that, mm-hmm. is that still the gold standard for working with allergies?
You know, I have seen allergists do that. I've seen allergists do some blood tests as well. I think that there is not a perfect answer, unfortunately, for these. And sometimes the different tests show different things. And sometimes it's those tests don't even show us all of the allergies. So some of it is just really paying attention to what you're exposed to every day in your food or in your environment, which can be so frustrating for everyone involved because it can be hard to find that thing.
Great info as always, Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw, Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Northwestern Medicine, Delner Hospital. Have a wonderful Sunday, Doctor, and nice talking to you.
Thanks, you too. Have a great week.